Congratulations, you've made it this far, and you so far, well, we're not doing too badly. We managed to leave behind quite a lot of things to be here, and all of you have given up a lot. So I really appreciate the fact that you've given up that, all of those things that you've done, and you've come here to find some peace, I guess. Is that right? Have you come here to find some peace? What, you couldn't find any back home? All right, so anyway, I'm Bhante Sujato, and I will be guiding you and supporting you through this retreat. Just before we go, before we get started, just wanted to say that the retreat would not have been possible except for the support from Samhita and the Tilorian Monastery, especially Aya Wimala, Danny, and Anagarika Sobhamita, who has done so much. All of them have done so much to make this possible. I'm sure that there's another whole long list of other people to be thanked as well, but I just wanted to mention that from the beginning. Would you like to do your introductions?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Bhante, for coming here all the way from Australia. And Bhante's actually doing a tour of like 2.5 months, 3 months, through America and Europe. So that's quite something. So thank you very much for joining us and for teaching us in this retreat. So to all of you, welcome. Welcome to Hogwarts. It's a beautiful castle, as you've seen. Is there anybody here who doesn't understand English very well? I think everybody here does, right? So we don't need translations. So that's very good. I want to introduce to you the team. So my name is Aya Wimala. If there's anything that you need, you can find me or knock on my door. I'm in B109. The team consists, of course, of Aya Sabamita, who is usually doing the translations, but all of you have been in contact with her because she's doing the registrations and doing a whole lot of other work as well. Danny, is Danny here? Oh, yeah, sorry. Just looking up. Danny is the kitchen manager. So for those of you who will be working in the kitchen, Danny's the person to see. So that's an enormous amount of work to cook for all of us for all these days. Then there is Hilda and Shannon. Can you raise your hand, please? Shannon and Hilda are also in the kitchen as part of the kitchen team. And of course, Theresia, where are you? Theresia is doing the sound. And then there is DJ, who is our confidant. And maybe, DJ, you can say something yourself about what your job actually is in that.
So, as a confidant, my role is to provide a safe space for all of you. What does it mean? A safe space, let's say, it means I'm here to listen to you. If you have anything to tell me about some things that goes wrong, for instance, bad behavior, inappropriate behavior, or misconduct, even of sexual nature. I do that in accordance with the ethical chart of the UBB, Union Buddhiste Belge. It's a way to prevent such things to happen in retreats or in all Buddhist sangha. So I'm here to hear you and see if you come to see me how we can deal with any problem you would have that would arise during your retreat to prevent them to to get worse. So I mean block A, zero, four. That's my room.
Okay. Thank you very much, Didier. I just want to add to that that the UBB, that's the Buddhist Union of Belgium, and Samita is a member of that, and all the members of the BUB have a confidant for all their retreats and other activities. The time schedule for the retreats is posted in several places. It's also been on the website. It's also on the board back there. Everything is optional except eating. So you have to eat. We're not fasting here. Yes. Oh, sleeping. Yeah, you have to sleep too. Yeah. There is also another group here for the first couple of days, and they're in the big temple. They're also in silence. They are fasting, actually. So just be a bit mindful also not to make too much noise, because there's also not just our group, but there's also the other group. All of you will have one interview with Bandha Sujato, and at least for the first few days, and after that there are sign-up sheets where you can, if you want to have more interviews. The list for that is also on the back of the whole, at least for tomorrow. I'll post a new list every day, so you can check that for your name. So tomorrow I can already say that's like all the men. And the interviews will be in the apartment, and that is in the C block, so that's the same block as where you're sleeping. On the first floor, at the end, there's a couple of stairs going up. So it's somewhere around there, and I will be there for the first few days too, and post some signs as well, so you know where to find that. We also have a work period after breakfast, between breakfast and 9 o'clock, and the sign-up sheets is also posted in the back there. So please put your name somewhere for doing some kind of work to help clean or help cut vegetables, or you can go for walks around the area. It's a very beautiful forest, but we ask you to please don't get shot. when you're in the center itself, you'll be fine. If you want to go further out into the forest, please check with the reception desk where the hunters are, because it is hunting season. So that's why I said don't get shot. Then there is one. I want somebody maybe to volunteer to be the door opener here, or to open the windows occasionally to bring some fresh air in, and to be that person. So not everybody goes and opens windows whenever they want, but just is one person being in charge of that. Somebody who wants to do that? Oh, lots of people. maybe Theresia, because you're here quite a lot anyway. I'll give you some instructions later on. Please also don't keep all the doors closed, because there are some people up here. The heating system in this room is actually for the whole building. It's a bit complicated, so don't change the heating system in any way, and keep all the doors closed so cold air doesn't go up. Then at night I will have to close the hall, so at around 9 o'clock or 9:30 I will close the hall, and I'll open it again at 6, or it'll be 4 or 6, maybe 5:45 or something like that. So if you want to meditate longer, then please do so in your room. And that's it as far as I'm concerned, so I wish you all a very good retreat. If you have any questions, you can probably catch me afterwards. And have a great retreat, and thank you, Bante.
Okay, well, it's a very special opportunity, as you can all see, and I always like to let the retreat take shape a little bit from the place and from the people, so when I come I don't have too much ideas about what we're going to do. Can I begin by just asking you a few questions? Is that okay? Is there anyone here, this is their first retreat? They've never been on retreat before. Anyone? One, two. Okay. That's all. All right, that's not too bad. So I'll give you a little bit of background into what we're going to be doing here together. My own experience in the Dhamma originated from Thailand. And I practiced in the forest tradition there. As part of the forest tradition, then they have a very a distinctive way of practicing, which is a little bit different to what you might find elsewhere. And one of the things that was very, I felt very conducive and very helpful for me in the forest tradition was that there was a sense that each person was trusted to practice, because each person was there because they wanted to be there, and they wanted to do this. And so I've always tried to embrace that spirit on retreats, and so I don't go around making too many rules and telling too many people what to do. So on the retreat, perhaps you've done different kinds of practices with different kinds of people, and you know, each retreat is a little bit different and the way people do things is a little bit different. So if you've never done a retreat with me or with someone from the forest tradition, you maybe find that this is a little bit unusual. So anyway, try it out and see. One of the things that we won't be emphasizing so much is on like formal group sitting, walking meditation, sitting meditation, walking meditation. Some retreats, they get you, everyone sits down at the same time, they get up and you walk at the same time and all of these kinds of things. So I don't like doing that because every person in this room is different. And some of you will sit for 10 minutes meditation and that's be all that you can actually meaningfully do. Or 5 minutes. Others will want to sit for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours. And you should be able to do that if you want to. So part of our practice here will be to learn what is the right thing for you to do. And that's actually a lot harder. It's relatively easy if somebody just says, do this, and you just do it. But see, there's a kind of a problem of authority here. Because if I sit at the front here and say to you, okay, sit for an hour, everyone thinks, oh, we should sit for an hour, because Bhante Sujato said we should sit for an hour. But I don't have a clue what your meditation is like. And I don't know whether it's right for you to be sitting for an hour or not. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Only you know that. And you have to learn what is the right amount of time for you to be sitting, how to be practicing, what meditation you should be doing. That's the wisdom that you need to learn about in your practice. So, if you want to come and practice here in the hall, great. This is the facility that's here for that. If you prefer to practice in your room or in one of the other places around, that's also fine. So please don't think that you have to come here and spend all day sitting in the meditation hall. For some people, that's quite stressful. They don't like sitting in a room, big room full of other people. They like being by themselves. I'm like that. I much prefer being by myself. So this is okay. When we read the suttas, we find that the Buddha was actually very open in terms of how he structured the time that was available for the monastics in his day. And people could get up, practice as they wished, and even it seems that they didn't even have like compulsory Dhamma talks in the time. It's a bit hard to imagine, right? But imagine that you were in the Jetta's Grove and the Buddha's giving a Dhamma talk in the evening, and you'd be like, meh, I don't think I'll feel like going along to the Dhamma talk today. So we give you some structure for the day. You know? We give you some meetings at different times and things like that. So there's a bit of structure, but there's also quite a bit of openness. And I would encourage you to use that openness to go for a walk, to do some walking meditation, to just sit for a while in the forest, to just do nothing. Don't feel like you have to meditate every minute of every day. It's ridiculous. Right? People sort of start to measure their meditation progress by how much time they spend sitting on a meditation cushion. Your meditation progress is about how peaceful you are, not about how many minutes you spend on the meditation cushion. So find what's right for you. Listen to your body. Listen to your mind. Not all of those voices are going to be good voices. Some of those voices talking to you are idiots, and they will be telling you to do stupid things, all right? But that's your job, is to listen and to figure out what are the voices of wisdom, what are the voices of stupidity. The teacher of my lineage was Ajahn Chah, and somebody once came to Ajahn Chah and asked him, Ajahn, do you teach... In your monastery, do you teach by reading people's minds and telling them how to meditate? And he said, in my monastery, we learn to read our own minds. And so there's not so much emphasis on this is when you start, this is when you stop, this is what you have to do. And there's also not so much emphasis on particular meditation techniques. So during this retreat, I'm going to be teaching some metta meditation. And I'd encourage you to try that out to see how it goes. But let me just check. I think everyone here has meditated before. Is that correct? Has everyone meditated before? Anyone never meditated? Everyone's done some meditation. Okay. So you all know how to meditate. So why am I up here telling you how to meditate? Yeah. Meditation's a practice. Actually, it's very easy. There's nothing to it. A little bit of teaching, a little bit of guidance and support, and then a lot of space, a lot of time, a lot of chance for you to digest it and to understand it and to figure out what's going on. So take your time. Don't be in a rush. Don't think that I'm going to achieve this or I'm going to get this or anything like that. Just be peaceful. Anytime you feel that mind coming up thinking, oh, I want to get this, I want to achieve this, I want to do this. No. Don't come to spiritual life and just do the same things that you did in your worldly life. Spiritual life is different. Our practice is different. How we go about it is different. Let go. Just let go. And everyone's like, it can't be that simple. I have to have some, you know, complicated theory or some complicated philosophy or something like that. But actually, it really is that simple. The problem is we don't do it. Okay, so having said all that, there's a few things that we're going to have to agree on for this retreat, because when we're all here practicing together, we all have to figure out how to support each other. And I'm here to support you in your practice, but don't forget that you are all here also to support each other. Don't imagine that this practice is something that for you to just do alone. Look around this room. Look at all the people here. Each one of these people is as messed up and screwed up as you are. I know, right? It's terrible. And everyone here is united by one thing, because they've come here to practice Dhamma. So we are all here for each other. and we can support each other by being mindful. When you come into the meditation room, open the door quietly, close the door quietly. When you walk to your seat, take each step as silently as you can. When you get up from your seat, do it mindfully and carefully. Everything that you do, do it mindfully and carefully and silently. And you do it like that as a gift for others. Now, I believe that most of you just had dinner, is that right? Yes, did you enjoy it? It was good? Okay, so I've got some bad news for you. So I believe we're keeping 8 precepts for this retreat, is that right? Yeah? Is there anyone that's having an exception who has to have something to eat in the afternoon? So there is. So yourself? Anyone else? Okay, yep. Okay, good. So there's a couple of people who are taking an exception for health reasons or whatever else. So if you see someone eating in the evening, then don't be all judgmental about them. All right? It's because of some health reason or whatever that they've asked for that exception. So that's good that you've done that. But for the others, then we're keeping the 8 precepts. Does anybody know what the 8 precepts are? Can someone tell me what's the first precept? Not killing. Okay, so that means that no matter how tempted you are, you're not allowed to go hunting while you're on this retreat. No, okay, not at all. Not even just a little bit, okay? So no killing. What else? Not taking what doesn't belong to you. Okay, so no, no bank robberies. Monk robberies. I don't know how you're going to steal a monk, but okay, fair enough. And... what else? 8 precepts. No sexual stuff, okay? No hanky-panky, okay? Right, no hanky-panky. Next one. That's correct, but we were going in order. Can we keep going in order? Do you remember what the next one is? Okay. So we'll come to that one in a minute, but the most important one is not lying, but wrong speech. Okay, good. Then the next one. Intoxicants, such as? Cigarettes. Only, well, funny cigarettes, maybe. Are cigarettes intoxicants? Generally speaking, cigarettes are not regarded as intoxicants, but it's probably not a good idea to smoke on a... Does anyone smoke here? Is anyone a smoker? No, okay, we're good. Okay, so not getting drunk. Okay, good. What's the next one? Next one? That was the eating afternoon, right? Next one, number 6. So not eating afternoon. What that means is we have the 2 meals in the day, and then that should be enough. Is there anything available for evening tea time? Yeah, so there's something available for evening tea time over in the kitchen? Okay, so these are medicines. And there is a long and complicated history to why these particular things are regarded as medicines. But anyway, just don't ask too many questions. That's all I recommend. Okay, and the next one. No jewelry, right? Makeup, dancing, singing, going to shows, all of that stuff. Okay, no. Having fun, basically. Okay? So far we've taken pretty much everything away that normally give people joy and happiness. And then we're going to complete that with the last one, which is no high and luxurious beds. Okay. So anyway, I'm sure you've all got whatever beds are supplied to you here. We'll be fine. All right, so that's the eight precepts. Now, is everybody here happy and content to keep the eight precepts? Yeah, that's good. If you break them or you're unsure of them or something like that, then you can always come and see myself or Aya and just ask us about it. Is this okay or is this not okay? Remember that in Buddhism, precepts are not commandments. So it's not me sitting up here telling you have to do these things. It's you deciding for yourself. Right? And that's not just me saying that. That's what the precepts are. When you recite the precepts, you say samadhiyami, which means I undertake. Okay? So the precepts are not thou shalt. Precepts are this is what I am going to do. Okay? So it's a decision that you make as a grown adult who is capable of making decisions and taking responsibility for your own actions. Is that right? Yes? Good. Well, I'm going to treat you like adults. All right? I'm not going to treat you like little children. Well, some exceptions, okay? Fair enough. But generally speaking, for most of you, yeah, you make the decision. Right? And if you break any of the precepts, well, I'm not going to come chasing you. Okay. Would you like to... In the Theravadan tradition, people will recite the precepts in Pali to take the precepts. Would you like to do that? We can if you want. Are they in the chanting book? I didn't check. They are. Okay, so we have a chanting book. So if you can get copies of the chanting book, then we can do that. Is everyone familiar with Pali? Do you know what Pali is? Yes? No? Does somebody want to tell me what Pali is?
Strange language.
Thank you. The language which is the closest to the one that the Buddha taught. Thank you. Okay, so the Pali language is the language which is used for, I guess, liturgy in the Theravadan tradition. So when we do chanting, thank you so much, we use Pali. And we do chanting in modern languages as well, but the basic chanting is in Pali. And one of the reasons why it's nice to do the chanting in Pali is because the Pali chanting is basically the same everywhere in the Theravadan world. So if you get a bit familiar with it and then you go and travel to Thailand or Sri Lanka, or even you go to a different Dhamma centre in Europe or in the States or something like that, then the chanting will be more or less the same. Now, there's, you know, some slightly different accents or something, but basically it's the same. So if you get familiar with it, it's nice because you can go to these different places and join in the chanting. So... where do we have the eight piece? Page 8. Okay. Okay, 8 precepts. So that's what we'll do is we'll do the Namo Tassa, homage to the Buddha, going for refuge, and then the 8 precepts. So we'll start on page 2, and then page 4, and then page 8. Most of you probably know the first two anyway. So this is the taking refuges ceremony. It's a little ceremony that's done in the Theravadan tradition and in, like I said before, in the Thai forest tradition, they would do this every week. So the lay people would all come to the monastery once a week and the villagers would all take the 8 precepts. Not everyone would take it, but a group of the villagers would take 8 precepts and then stay in the monastery and practice and listen to Dhamma during that day and that night. So this is a practice that's been around since the time of the Buddha. It was highly recommended by the Buddha, especially for lay people. So for lay people to do as an occasional, like a spiritual practice time, then this is what the Buddha recommended, and it's been maintained in that way all that time. So let's chant together Namo Tassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. And the refuges. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. And for the precepts, if you repeat after me. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Abrahamacharya veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjapamada dhana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Vikala bhojana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Nacha gita vadita visukha dasana mala gandha vilepana dharana mandana vibhusana dhana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Uchasayana mahasayana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Uchasayana Imami attasi kapadani silena sugatingyanti silena bhoga sampada silena nibbutingyanti tasma silam visodhaye. Okay, very good. Now, a couple of other details on the retreat. As I mentioned before, that the other group who's practicing here is doing a silent retreat. So I want to ask you whether you think that this would be, whether this is what you want to do as well, to do a silent retreat. Now, before we make a decision on this, because it has to be your decision, before we make a decision, would you like to know what the Buddha said about doing a silent retreat? Yes? Yes? Okay. Do you think doing silent retreats is good? Yes? Okay. So there's a story from the time of the Buddha, and this is told in the Vinaya, the monastic code, in the chapter on the Pavarana. And the at that time there was a group of monks who were living going to spend the rains retreat together. So each year we spend 3 months staying in one place and practicing together. And so this group of monks said, how should we practice for this rains retreat? And so they divided up the chores among themselves, and they organized how they were going to live and how they were going to meditate and all of these things. And then they said, and in addition to doing those things, let's keep a vow of silence, and we won't speak at all during these 3 months of the rains retreat. So they passed that rains retreat. And at the end of it, they left. They went to Savatthi, to where the Buddha was staying, and the Buddha said, oh, how are you monks? How was your rains retreat? And they said, oh, it was good. And the Buddha said, well, how did you practice? And they told him. And they told him how they'd kept the duties and practiced and done all these things, and how they had kept a vow of silence for the whole rains retreat. And the Buddha said to them, how can you foolish men live together like pigs? How can you foolish men live together like cattle? How can you foolish men live together like sheep? How can you take a vow of silence which is not a Buddhist practice? I forbid it. It is not to be done. Taking a vow of silence is not to be done. So let me ask you again. Who wants to take a vow of silence for this retreat? It takes courage, right? These people who just put up their hands, I respect that. So what's going on? Why was the Buddha so down on taking a vow of silence? Right? I mean, the Buddha was said to be the silent sage. There were so many times when people would ask him questions, and they'd come and ask him something, and the Buddha would just stay silent. It's like very enigmatic. Does anyone have any thoughts? Why would the Buddha be so down on people keeping a vow of silence? Okay, thank you. Yeah, very important. So through discussion, and discussion of Dhamma is one of the important critical ways of learning to understand the teachings. Interestingly enough, there's another, that same story, very similar, is told elsewhere in another sutta called the Chula Gosinga Sutta. Except the difference is there, instead of keeping a vow of silence, every 5 nights that the monks would come together and discuss Dhamma. Yeah? So I think this is a really important difference. And another difference is that in that story, the one where they'd kept a vow of silence, when they finished it, the Buddha made a rule for a procedure to be done in the Sangha called Pavarana, which means invitation. What that means is at the end of the 3 months range retreat, that the monks and the nuns have to invite each other for admonishment for anything that they've done which is wrong. And this is also pointing to a very important aspect of the use of speech, that we need to use speech in order to help create harmony and to build a community so people can understand each other. Right? So when they were taking that vow of silence, it meant that if there was any problem in the community, they couldn't talk about it. You just had to stew until the end of the retreat, right? And you couldn't actually say, excuse me, could you, like, you know, whatever, flush the toilet after you use it, or whatever the problems that they had. Huh? So, right speech is part of the Noble Eightfold Path. And right speech is not no speech. Okay? Right speech means speaking at the right time, speaking about what's meaningful, speaking on the Dhamma. And sometimes, no speech can be a practice of avoidance. So there's actually something that needs to be said and we don't say it. So, may I suggest that we keep that practice of silence, the Buddha called noble silence, and we don't speak unless it's part of our Dhamma discussion or part of a meditation interview. Yeah? Or something that really needs to be said. Okay? Does that sound reasonable? Sometimes practical things, right? You need to talk about. Yeah? And it's always okay to say thank you. All right? That's a blanket exception. You can always say thank you. So does that sound okay? Is everyone happy with that? Are you all capable of telling the difference between a short amount of speech on something that's necessary and long rambling gossip about completely irrelevant and meaningless things? You think you know the difference. All right, so, okay. So, in case you're finding it difficult to tell the difference, I have a little helper here. So this is a roll of duct tape. So if anybody is finding it difficult to know when the right time to speak is, then I'm happy to help you out, okay? So just let me know. And the other thing which we're going to have to address is the problem of mobile phones. Oh my goodness. Aren't they terrible? Right? Anyway, so you assume people have their mobile phones? Should we take them off you? Well, when I was at retreat in New York, that's what they did. They said this is the only way you can stop people from using mobiles, is just by, you just have to take them. Maybe. Or maybe, like, when you don't have your phone, then you get a good night's sleep for the first time in years. Right, yeah. So look, I don't think we're going to take your phones, but we'll be thinking about it, all right? So if you're naughty, then there will be consequences. So please be restrained. Look, and I know that sometimes that there are things people need to check up with their family or something like that. Again, it's one of those things that's difficult to make a 100% rule about. And we're going to be here over New Year's or whatever, and so if you need to use your phone occasionally for something important, then that's okay. But again, please know the difference. And once again, in case anybody does have difficulties telling the difference, and sometimes people don't seem to be able to find the off switch on their mobile phone, So I've bought a universal off switch for all your mobile phones. So if you're having trouble, again, happy to help you out. So this is a, for those of you who can't see, this is a hammer I'm holding in my hand. Okay. Right. What else? What else? So what I'll be doing, like the schedule I'll be doing mostly during the retreat, is that in the mornings we'll have some of short and simple instructions on meditation, and mostly just have some practical pointers to get you through the day. And then the evening I'll do some guided meditation and a Dhamma talk. I'm not entirely sure what to do with questions and answers, but we'll see how we go in the evening. We might have a short Q&A session there in the evening. The only reason that I'm a bit iffy about question and answer sessions is sometimes that they go on, they, you know, become quite distracting from the meditation for people. So I prefer to keep it a bit more focused. Like having question and answer sessions is great, but on a meditation retreat it can be a bit distracting sometimes. Okay. Is there anything else? Any questions that anyone has right now? No? Everyone's good? Okay. Can I just ask, how many people here have been on one of my retreats before? So a few people have been on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, so about half the people have been on one of my retreats before. Gluttons for Punishment. Okay. And... all right. Is there anything on this retreat that you would especially like to see me focus on or emphasize, which maybe you're interested in, or something that you feel needs to be covered, or something like that? Yeah. Okay. So I will try to. If I do organize things on the suttas, I will. If I just think of things on the spot, I won't always remember the reference, but I will try to. Yep. Good, thank you. Good point. Yeah. Right. I talk about that every time I talk these days, so that won't be a problem. For those of you who don't know, the monastery I'm in at the moment in Sydney is called the Lokanta Vihara, the monastery at the end of the world. And dealing with what we're going to be doing with the end of the world is, I think, important. I find it weird. People say to me things like, "Oh, you're somebody who really, you know, is really concerned with the environment or something like that." I'm like, "Yeah, I live on this planet. Yes, that's true." I'll just say a few words about it now. I mean, as I've mentioned, I'm from Sydney, and I'm sure many of you know that Sydney has been besieged by bushfires for quite a number of weeks now. They just made another announcement. They, in Victoria, in the south of Australia, they just evacuated a whole large area, East Gippsland. It's like a big kind of tourist area, and there's like 80,000 tourists or something in that region. They just told all of them to leave the entire region because they can't guarantee anyone's safety. The massive fire, the bushfires in Australia in the last few weeks have consumed more than the entire country of Belgium. When I left Sydney, I went to California, and there, of course, in Northern California, they were evacuating all of the places, bushfires burning everywhere. Smoke everywhere, wind howling across, they were turning all the power off. I stayed at one monastery, a Dhammadharini monastery, and they were receiving nuns, bhikkhuni monastery. They were receiving other bhikkhunis who were being evacuated from Aranyabodhi, from another monastery. Then later on, a few days later, we were at another bhikkhuni monastery, a local vihara, and then the nuns from Dhammadharini had been evacuated. So successively evacuated from one monastery after the other. My father was evacuated from his house. Then the monks at Wat Buddha Dhamma had to be evacuated from their monastery to Santi Forest Monastery with the nuns. And now we just heard that the nuns might have to be evacuated from their monastery as well in Bundanoon, in the south of Sydney. The massive fires down there, the fires in the national park down there have consumed 200,000 hectares and are currently classified as being out of control. So this is the world that we live in, and these catastrophes, this is just one. It's just one of multiple disasters going on all at the same time. And there is such a need for us to become more conscious of this and to start asking those deep questions about who are we? How are we to live in these times? Now, I'm not here on a spiritual retreat. I'm not here to tell you to do any particular kind of political action. You should, just for the record, you should do everything that you can, and you should do a lot more than you are doing, and all of us should, right? So please don't think I'm sort of ignoring or marginalizing that, but for me, as a spiritual teacher and a spiritual practitioner, these kind of questions that keep coming up for me is like, who are we? What kind of creature are we, Homo sapiens, that we came and we came into this beautiful place, this beautiful earth, and we treated it like this? And there's such a feeling of tragedy. One of the first places I stayed at on this trip was in LA, and I stayed in a very beautiful house with some very kind of successful couple there, and they put me up in their very, very lovely house in the LA Hills. We were just in the Hollywood Hills, just not far from the Hollywood sign, and this is like sort of consumerist utopia, right? It's like it doesn't really get much better than that in terms of living in samsara. But this couple, their son, they had an 18-year-old son who had been in rehab, had to go away to an institution because he's suffering from distress about climate change anxiety. That was how bad it was. Yeah. He's completely broken down. Lovely kid. I met him briefly. Yeah, beautiful kid, very intelligent, very sensitive, and just didn't know how is he going to live in this world. So I don't have any answers, as will become abundantly clear during the retreat. So I'm not here to give you any answers. If there's one answer that I can give you, it's to say that nobody has any answers, because these are unprecedented times. All we have is, at best, educated guesses. So I don't know what to do. And as a teacher, spiritual teacher, I can share with you my own concerns, my own fears, my own anxieties, my own vulnerabilities. I hope that as spiritual practitioners, we can find some strength, some resilience, some capacity to cope and to empathize. And I hope that these are qualities that will stand us in good stead no matter what the circumstances. So we can't change the future, we can't control it. But we can lend a helping hand to each other. We can be something for each other. And if we can do that, then I think we're already doing quite a lot. So I'll come back to this theme during the retreat. Is there anything else? Okay, it's probably enough for now. I don't want to keep you too long. So please, everybody, we'll break up now. Go back, make sure you get a good night's rest. If you're too tired, you can't make it in the morning for the morning meditation, then just sleep in. I would much rather you sleep in for a day or two and be rested and meditate for the rest of the retreat than just be sitting there and falling asleep. Better off sleeping in your bed than on your meditation cushion. Right? Usually what happens when you first come on a retreat, the first few days, because your energy is a bit hyper and a bit wired, then you sort of crash and lose energy for a few days, and then it'll gradually come back again. So don't worry about it too much. If you feel tired at the beginning, it's okay. It's quite normal. And over the next few days, we'll gradually settle into that rhythm. All right? Okay. Good enough. I will see you tomorrow morning.